NVIDIA showed off DLSS 5, and wow, do people have opinions on it. Plus, a new video store simulator is out, and I played it all weekend. Tonight is March 22nd, 2026, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash. Later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
How's your bracket doing? Those that celebrate. Mine, day one, busted. Because I have too much faith in Georgia, and you really shouldn't do that. Hello, everybody, and welcome to not a sports edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, thank you so much for being here. Welcome. We do try to tape this show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at that Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly, and I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. And did I really make the Gigantify an emote 500 bits? That's too high. It should not cost that much to make a big emote in our chat room. I will need to fix that when I am off the air tonight, because that's way too high. That's way too much. But thank you to Dark Sakura who paid that, and I will adjust that. But not in the next hour. I've got other stuff to do. So, but for the next hour, obviously, this is a podcast as well. So you can join us on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/Discord. That is where you can contact, give feedback to the show, give us ideas of what you want to be talked about on the show. Some of the stories I do source from there. You can also give feedback on previous episodes as well. So you can join us there, and thank you so much for listening here, even on the podcast. So, let's go ahead and get into things, because I am not actually going to talk about Commodore this time. I mean, I just mentioned them, but I'm not going to, I don't have anything to add. So we're going to talk about something else that I've been playing that's actually new, something that came out this week, and it is a new game, a new indie game that is out right now, and it's made a lot of social media chatter because it tickles the fancy of a lot of people that are nostalgic for the past. And the game is called Retro Rewind, and it just came out on Steam just this weekend. It is on sale for the rest of the weekend, by the way. And what it is a Blockbuster video simulator, essentially. You are, it's in the growing trend of the store, the store simulator games like TCG Card Shop Simulator, which is currently in game preview on Game Pass, but it's also been in early access for a while. But this is, you're actually running a retro, retro-inspired, but like it's actually the 90s. So it's not retro then, it was modern then, of your a video store, video rental store, where people are renting VHS tapes. You are stocking the store, putting the shelves up, taking calls, stocking, getting, you know, it's a little bit more than just what we remember. But I've been playing it all weekend. And, you know, Dark Soccer says, relive the retail jobs you had after high school. And yes, that is, there is a growing market for that because, you know, it turns out we do want to work. People don't want to work anymore. We do. And a lot of these simulators actually prove it. And like when I talk about VR, the game that I played the most in VR is American Truck Simulator. Do I want to be a truck driver in real life? Hell no. But for some reason, it is, it is calming to just sit in a virtual truck in VR. I use it in VR mode, and it and just, you know, drive around and make deliveries. And that's that is, I don't know why it's calming, and I can't explain it, and I'm not talking to a therapist right now, so I can't dissect it or anything. But so some of these is just, there's like some like rote patterns, and you just kind of get in a vibe, and you enjoy it. So TCG game card simulator, or game shop simulator, I think. TCG game shop simulator is out on early access, and it's kind of the same thing. Where you're running a, you know, basically a Magic the Gathering store, and you're stocking card packs, but you're also running tournaments, and you're, you know, hiring employees and stuff. So this is the this is kind of in the same vein. And this, a lot of people have fond memories of going somewhere on a Friday night to go get a piece of physical media so you could have it for the weekend and watch the latest thing. And it's a nostalgic thing because we don't have that now. Now it's like, oh, it's up on streaming. I just hit a button and it goes. And there are some people that actually want some of these video stores to come back, especially in the age of, you know, content is being taken off services and then you can't get to it anymore. So people would rather go to a video store and rent a DVD or rent a Blu-ray and then take it back. And there are some of these around the country where they've popped back up. And I don't know if the last Blockbuster is open. I believe it might have closed, the one in Bend, Oregon, the last independently owned Blockbuster video that had all the licenses. So I wanted to check this out. And Dark Soccer says, would you say this is also a form of real life preservation, experience preservation? Maybe. Now, this is not true to how things were, because this is kind of more of a mogul simulator, kind of like how SimCity was as well, where you're in charge of the store. Yes, at the beginning, you're doing all the actions yourself, but then it should run itself as you keep going up. You're not doing the low-level jobs. And so you're kind of more like in the SimCity role where you are controlling the city. Yeah, you are also doing some mayoral things as well, but you're controlling the city and the city is running without you. Pogwash says, that Blockbuster video in Bend, Oregon is still open. All right. So, I, as I have mentioned before, my first job was actually at Blockbuster Video, and I'm holding up my name tag that is a mid-90s style name tag. And I know some people would be like, well, you 3D printed that. Okay, well, fine. I might have 3D printed that, but I didn't print this out. My employee handbook from Blockbuster Video, revised in January 1994, by the way. So I have this. But also, not only, I have the Star Maker series. Now, this is the huge, and I definitely, it's spiral bound. This is the training material that was given. And Tire Claw says, yeah, Blockbuster was my first job too. I lasted throughout the 90s. So this is the training material of when I was there as a customer service representative. We were Star Makers. That's what we were. And apparently they had one of these for each of the different departments, because I had the CSR one, but there was a CRC and AM and SRM. And so when was this? What year was this? 1993. So this is the Star Maker from 1993. Now, one of the things I wanted to mention is because the Tiger Claw was in chat and I was like, did you have to, you know, do the, you know, stupid like 45 degree angle on the bottom two shelves? And he's like, well, they never told us any of that stuff. So I will tell you, because I found it in here on page 77, all tapes in the blocking and striping section of the merchandising and film categories section of the Star Maker book. All tapes are stored flat against the shelf except for the bottom two rows, where they should be set at a 45 degree angle to increase visibility. And so I was not making it up. I was kind of accused of, like, well, that's not really what happened. I worked at Blockbuster and we never had to do that. Well, in 1995, when I worked there, because this book was printed in 1993. Yes, we had to do that. There was a time, I believe, not too long after I was no longer at Blockbuster, that they got rid of that, and they said that everything can be flat against the wall. But when I was there, we had to do that. We were hardcore rule followers at my Blockbuster Video, which I believe is now a Verizon store and a Pizza Hut. And it was like one whole build, like it was a building that was kind of detached from the shopping center that it was in. It was one of those front buildings. I don't know what there's an actual term for them, and I don't know what it is. The Blockbuster Video I worked at was the whole thing. Now it's like three or four different businesses is that building. And I think like there's a Pizza Hut on one side, and I think it's like a Verizon wireless store, and then there's like a haircut place on the other side. But it was one building for us. And Mike Deff says, when Bobby worked at Blockbuster, he had to walk 5 miles uphill in the snow. Excuse me. I grew up here in Atlanta. We didn't have snow. Yes, it was uphill because it's very hilly here. And I was about 5 miles away, but there was no snow involved. And I had a car. So I drove uphill both ways. But it was not snowing. There was no... Plus, I was also there in the summer, so there absolutely wasn't snow because it was a summer job. And I went off to college before I could experience going to Blockbuster in the snow. So I bring that up to say that I kind of have a sense of what this real life is like. I've never run a TCG card game shop or a TCG card shop. Never run one of those. I've never been a trucker. So I can't really talk about how close American Truck Simulator is to real life. But I have done this. I have worked the exact job that you're doing in Retro Rewind, which, by the way, there is a demo available right now on Steam. You can get the demo. ZenMonkey11 says, I downloaded the game a day or two ago. I had no idea the game was for sale now. I just bought it now. Yes, and it is actually on sale until tomorrow. So it's a normally like a $20 game, and I think it's 20% off right now, and that's when I got it. So I want to heap every bit of praise on it, because even Dark Tetsuya in chat says, the demo actually hooked me, but I maxed out on what I can currently do, so it'll have to wait until payday until I can get back to it. What I will actually say is that unlike TCG Card Shop Simulator, which... Once again, if you still have Game Pass, which you might not, and I completely understand, if you do still have Game Pass, it is on Game Pass, both PC and console, and streaming. Unlike TCG Card Shop Simulator, basically, I don't exactly know when the demo ends, because I never played the demo, I just bought it and went right in. It doesn't really progress much after that, and it's very disappointing. You max out on your... Basically, here's the game loop. You go in. It's like 8 a.m. Store's not open yet. You can go... All the tapes that were returned overnight, you scan them in. You can restock shelves. You can go to the computer. You can buy new tapes. If there's new releases, you go in and buy the new releases. Put them on the shelves. You can buy more shelves, decorate, whatever. Then you click the open sign. Then it goes. There is no pause. Well, you can pause the game, but like it goes to like the settings screen. So it goes. And so then customers are in, they want, you know, attention, you're on the floor doing things, you're running the cash register, giving change, finding movies for people, people are calling, asking for reservations, you're taking them behind the desk, things are coming in, if it's slow, you're going to go take the movies out, check them in, if they're broken, you throw them away, but then you put them back on the shelf and stuff like that. And then at the end of the day, the game ends, or the day ends, time stops, and you can do whatever. You can stay as late as you want, but no customers are going to come in after close. And then you click the button and you go to the next day. So that's the game loop. Unfortunately, all the days pretty much are the same. And even it feels like it's still an early access game, which it's not. They don't say it's early access. This is the version 1.0 retail release of this game. And you can basically max out maybe at only getting like $200 to $300 worth of profit a day. And no matter what you do, if you like have snacks and you repair the Slurpee machine, which is one of the first things, and then the popcorn machine, which slows things down. But you can't advance past like that $200, $300 a day. And like the first store expansion is $1,000. And you're still got to like buy the new releases and things like that. So it's, and you only have like the one register. And even if you hire somebody, which they, you can actually hire employees, they're slower than you. It does free you up to reload the shelves, but they're slower than you. And there's only one of them. And so the line is still like the customers, they're still going to be the same amount of customers. You're not getting through customers any faster. That is kind of disappointing because at least TCG Card Shop Simulator, which I know I'm comparing it a lot to that, but that's really kind of the closest analogy that is not some like AI slop thing that somebody made that in reaction to TCG Card Shop Simulator. TCG Card Shop Simulator at least has like the mechanic of opening the packs and you get the value of the packs and you can sell cards individually. And that's how you make a whole bunch of money in a day. And then you can actually expand your store. You can actually get a second register. You can get a bunch of things and expand it more. And it's still in early access. Retro Rewind, it doesn't seem like it has that. Like it doesn't matter if you've got snacks, a snack shelf filled with snacks. It doesn't really raise how much you're going to make in a day. And I'm actually at the point right now where I actually have more tapes than I have shelf space, and I've already used up all the space that I can put a shelf on. So I'm kind of like in a kind of a holding pattern for a couple days while I try to make enough money to get to that $1,000 store expansion so I can get a bigger space. There's more on the roadmap according to the Steam page for Retro Rewind, and maybe that will fix some of this, but this does feel like it's an early access title that has potential, but it's very much a, it's really thought out in the first couple days, basically the part of the demo, and then it doesn't, there's not much that you can do. Like you don't expand past the profits that you get. Because you can't set prices, which in TCG Card Shop Simulator, you can set the prices. You can say, okay, and you actually have to every day because the market fluctuates on these game cards. So, you know, sometimes the price, people won't buy it if it's too high over market price. So you need to kind of go through every day and kind of, okay, am I charging the right thing? Am I getting enough stuff? So yeah, as Jeremy Matt says, it sounds like it levels out pretty quick. It does right now. And when I say right now, I mean like in March of 2026, it does. If you're listening to the podcast in 6 months, it's probably not going to be the same game because there is a lot of stuff. Like he wants to get to the point where, or I don't know. I think it's a solo developer and I think it's a he, him, but I don't know. So they, let's just use they want to add like game rentals where you get, and maybe even renting out the systems and the players, because back in the day, you could rent a VCR from Blockbuster. You could rent a Nintendo 64, a Virtual Boy. You could do all that from Blockbuster, and so he wants to do some of that too. But that's not there today in March of 2026. Maybe if you're listening to this in September of 2026, my complaints might be non-existent. So let's get that out there. Now, ZenMonkey11 says, I smell this game will be loaded with DLC. There was a post that was said, that was put up by the developer that says that it is not their intention to put any DLC. All of the things that were on the roadmap are going to be free updates. They do not intend in March of 2026... they do not intend to have DLC, and that is a post from the developer on Steam about all these updates. Now, if that's going to actually be the case, none of us know. But the intention, as stated right now, it is an indie game, it is self-published, so there's no publisher, there's no investors trying to breathe down the neck and trying to dictate a lot of this stuff. This is that one person, or that one, either one person or small development team, that's driving this. So they have a little bit more control over if that's true or not. But also, we don't know who, I don't know the person or the team. So I don't know if they're trustworthy when saying that. I do like it, but I am getting to the point where now it's the same every single time. Like, as you level up, you can like unlock new genres. And then it's like, okay, well, I don't have room to store this new genre. So I've got to like figure out. And so now I've actually started, and there's no real good like storage system in the back where like you can put tapes up on the back, and you can't even sell them until you get to level 10, where, you know, like you get a new release. There's a whole new release mechanic. And I'm like, OK, well, I'll buy 10 copies of the new release because they go out. You know, people want the new release. You want to have a lot of copies. But then about a month or two out after that, nobody wants the new release anymore. And it goes basically into general circulation. And the video stores in the past would say, OK, well, here's all our extra stock. Now we're going to put it out for sale so people can buy it. And that's why a lot of people have tapes that they bought from Blockbuster. They were new releases that then, when they were no longer new releases, Blockbuster had all this extra inventory and they sold it. And that was how they made their final sale on it. And you don't unlock that until level 10. But you can't set the price. It sets the price for you. So, and there's no tracking in the game of like what movies are popular, what movies aren't, because then you would be able to make decisions on, well, do I get rid of these tapes to put better stuff on the shelf? Stuff like that. It does, you can see like, oh, this has a good critic review, this movie has a bad critic review, but people like bad movies, so you want to still stock them. So there's probably some better reporting that can be done for like the management simulator side of this that's not there right now. I think it really worked on the first couple of days, the idea of stocking the shelves, putting in the register, you know, dealing with customers, reserving and stuff, and didn't really think more about the business management side of running a small business like this. I do like it, but maybe it might be the case that the demo is really as far as you need to go in March of 2026, and you wait until the future stuff's coming in. But I do like it. I do like the ambiance. There are TVs in the store. There's one in the back and then one in the front, and you can have them on different channels. The way it actually works is that there's video files. There's a video file for each channel, and as you unlock more genres, you get more channels. Or there's a public access one, and it actually tells you, here's the video codec, here's the audio codec, and here's the resolution, which is 512 by 512. So it's it's not even a 4x3. It's a you know, 1:1. And you get that file, and you drop it in that directory, and you can watch that file in the TVs. So if you have, I think 200 megs is the limit of the video file that the game can load. So as long as it's under 200 megs. So you're not going to put a whole movie in there, but I had like a VHS copy, or somebody had put up on YouTube or something, a VHS of like the Sierra Online promotional tape from like 1989, and it's like, you know, 10 minutes long. So I converted that to the format it wanted, and it's all about Sierra games and stuff is what's playing in my store. So that was kind of cool. But I could keep on going about some of that stuff. But anyway, Retro Rewind, yes, it's cool. It is enjoyable. Hopefully soon they will add things to make it more of a varied way of playing as you go through, because I feel like for the past couple hours I've been doing the same thing. It's just been with different names, which are procedurally generated but not generative AI. And it is kind of neat the way they do the titles of the movies, because they're all like unique titles, but it's procedurally generated. And they'll have like, and they'll even procedurally generate the art on the front of the box. So if it's like, anything that's not a new release, the new releases they made specifically for, parodies of current movies, or of movies that were like, because X Terminate is on there. Guess what that is? Bad Backs is on there, and you can guess what that is. I don't know if it's the same order. When everybody's game, but the other titles, it's like the fantasy, or it'll take like ideas and put them together, and then they'll make the image based on those words. So it's kind of so Tiger Claw is like, are the titles like movie parodies? The new release titles are movie parodies. The generic ones that are not new releases, they are mishmashes of things, and they are kind of funny, and some of them don't make sense. But then, you know, you look and you can see like, oh, both of these movies have T-Rex in the title, and it's the same T-Rex in the same place in the image. So it is kind of a neat engineering concept. And apparently no generative AI was used, so we don't have to worry about that. The developer did confirm that no generative AI was used. It is just regular old procedural generation that we've been doing in games for decades. And Dark Tetsuya says, I do like some of the tapes or foil and hologram. Yes, and those are worth more. Or you put them in a display case, which is what I did because there's an achievement behind it. Anyway, let's talk about the news that happened this week. So this first one, it was something that that came across. And the billionaire-funded metaverse. Remember the metaverse? It was the thing before NFTs that was the grift. The metaverse, which originally was everybody's going to have a VR headset. They're going to do all their work in VR. We're going to play all our games in VR. We're all going to live in VR. We're not going to live in the real world anymore. So we're all going to live in the metaverse. Well, the billionaire-funded metaverse is now no longer going to be in VR. Upload VR reports that so earlier this week, it actually announced, Meta announced the Horizon Worlds metaverse platform is dropping VR support in June, meaning it will only be available as a flat screen experience for the web and smartphones. So Horizon Worlds, that was Meta's version of VR chat, basically. They put billions of dollars into this, and it was not very useful. It was a nice gimmick, especially for people who didn't live in VR. But it did not come anywhere close to the vision that was of the metaverse that was in Neal Stephenson's books like Snow Crash or even Ready Player One. But that's what Meta wanted. And now they've said, you know what? VR, not going to be the where the metaverse lives. Now, the metaverse lives inside your phone. That's where the metaverse lives. And so they're getting rid of it. And there is a community using Horizon Worlds in VR. They love it, just like there was a community in PlayStation Home, and it was killed by Sony. PodCulture asks, so is it Second Life? Yeah, it was Second Life, except it's more VR chat. Like, and if you've never used VR chat, that's a terrible metaphor, because VR chat is just Second Life. But instead of Second Life being like a world, a flat world, like you have like parcels of land in a flat world, this one you just go into instance rooms. And it worked a lot like VR chat and Horizon Worlds worked a lot alike. They did a lot of the same things, except VR chat did everything better. But you could make your own experience in Horizon, and you could then, you know, using tools like Unity, the Unity game engine, which is also what VR chat uses, by the way, and you can make this whole VR experience. It runs in there, and then VR chat or Horizon Worlds just allows avatars to be in them. They give you the building blocks to allow avatars, VR avatars, to walk around, interact with things, and then you just build it out like that. It is now not going to be in VR anymore, but Meta actually did reverse a tiny bit. Upload VR reports that, backtracking on what it announced earlier this week, Meta says it will keep Horizon Worlds VR support for existing games. In an Ask Me Anything session on their Instagram page, Meta CTO Andrew Bosworth says the company has decided to keep Horizon Worlds working in VR for existing games to support the fans who've reached out. So this was the actual quote. Quote, I have a little bit of good news for you then. We have decided just today, in fact, that we will keep Horizon Worlds working in VR for existing games to support the fans who've reached out, like the person who they was replying to, who really care about that. The Horizon Unity runtime games, they're not going to work on mobile. They're going to just be working in VR. We're not bringing any new games. Most of Meta's energy is going to be towards mobile and the Meta Horizon engine there. The reason for that is because that's where most of the consumer and creator energy always already was. And so we're leaning into that. But for people who already have games that they like that they were using in Horizon Worlds, they will be able to download the Horizon Worlds app and use it in VR for the foreseeable future. Now, Horizon was actually like preloaded on the Quest, and you couldn't get rid of it. And everything on the front page of the Quest store was all Horizon Worlds stuff. And so if you didn't use Horizon Worlds, there was a lot. It took a while to get to the actual like VR content because I had a Meta Quest 3 from work for like a couple months last year. And I no longer have it. I had to give it back when I left the job. But, you know, you had to like try to dig to get through all the Horizon World stuff. Well, now you're not going to have to do that. Now Horizon Worlds is just going to be an app. And then it's only going to work with the old legacy stuff. The picture painted here is a clean technical break with the legacy Unity version of Horizon Worlds continuing to support VR and the new Horizon engine focusing fully on flat screen. So there are the Horizon Unity runtime, but then there's a Horizon desktop editor as well. But there's a new Horizon engine and Horizon Studio. That's what Meta's actually using for everything, and that's what we're getting there. The VR support will continue through the Horizon Worlds VR app, which Bosworth says will stay on the Quest Store for the foreseeable future, but not forever, because the minute they change what you need to be on the Quest, do you really think they're going to put in the man hours to update that old app to work on the new SDK? No, they're not. Specific worlds will not be recommended by the operating system, though, and nor will they be seen in the storefront. Horizon Worlds will just be another app on the store, which actually will declutter the store for people who didn't use Horizon Worlds. As for the reason by not supporting VR and Horizon Engine, Bosworth repeated the explanation that he's been giving for 2 months now, quote, because that's where most of the consumer and creator energy already was, and so we're leaning into that, unquote. Back in January, they said that Meta has seen really positive pickup in Horizon Worlds on smartphones and said that the company planned to double down on this. So he actually said, quote, you've got a team that actually has product market fit and a huge market on mobile phones, and they're having to build everything twice. They're building it once for mobile phones and building it again for VR. There's a pretty easy way to increase their velocity. Just let them build for mobile. So Horizon is very focused on now on mobile, not exclusively, but almost exclusively, unquote. So here's the thing that I want to ask. For all of you that's out there that's probably not in our chat room, for all of you that are like, generative AI is the future, it's going to increase everybody's velocity. If that was actually true, why would Meta have to do this? If generative AI and all the tools, Claude Code, GPT, whatever you're using, if all of that was true and that could do everything that we are being told it can do today, and companies are laying off engineers because of that, that is what they say it can do today. If generative AI could do this, why can't they build things for their mobile and have generative AI build the VR version? Why can't they do it? If what they're saying is that this generative AI in coding, if it speeds up all this stuff, then shouldn't Meta is a big backer of generative AI and using all these coding tools and laying off engineers because they don't need as many engineers because we've got generative AI. Can't generative AI do this? Because according to what all the venture capitalists are saying, that yes, absolutely it can do this. So what this is telling me is that generative AI can't do everything that they're saying it's doing. The engineers know it can't do everything they're saying it's doing. But as Dark Socrates says in our chat room, corporate management doesn't understand engineering. Even if they used to be engineers, they don't understand engineering. ZMonkey11 says, I use Horizon Worlds. Right now, the VR chat community is helping the Horizon World creators get set up in VR chat because, like I said, it is Unity. So, like, there's just, they know how to use, like, the basic toolbox that Unity gives you. And it's just, okay, this is how I did interactions in Horizon Worlds. This is how I do interactions in the VR chat SDK or whatever, which is a software development kit, by the way. It's the interface between the game engine and whatever VR chat has that's proprietary or Horizon Worlds. Or your VR headset, or anything like that. And I understand not everybody's a developer here, so I gotta be careful with my TLAs, which is a 3-letter acronym, by the way. So Tireclaw says it can't do everything now, but what will it be able to do in a couple of years? I was told 3 years ago, because ChatGPT came out in 2022. I was told 3 years ago that it would be able to do everything in 3 years, which was last year. So everybody's like, oh, yeah, I can't do much now. But imagine what it's going to be able to do in 2025. It's going to create entire things. We're not going to need engineers anymore in 2025. It's always 3 years away. Everything is, it's always 2 or 3 years away. The billionaire-funded metaverse is no longer going to be in VR. It's going to be on mobile phones because I guess a lot of people started using Horizon Worlds on mobile phones, and so that's where Meta is going. They have been closing down VR studios. They've been kind of pausing VR development, shutting down projects, and this is just yet another one. Because Mark Zuckerberg wanted the Oculus company to make this metaverse, and now he doesn't need Oculus, the company that was Oculus, to make the metaverse, because now the metaverse is just going to be on an iPhone or an Android. All right. Let's talk about the big story that happened this week that a lot of people have been talking about. And it's more about generative AI and stuff, but it's about how companies want to now use it to make games look better in less time. And we're talking about NVIDIA, and we're talking about the new version of DLSS. Now, IGN reports that NVIDIA has announced DLSS 5 at GTC 2026, a new iteration of the company's gaming AI suite that is describing as the GPT moment for graphics. So DLSS debuted in 2018 with the RTX 2080, and it was initially just the deep learning super sampling that it's named after. The idea was to take a game, render it at a lower resolution, then upscale it using AI back to your native resolution. DLSS has evolved a lot in the years since, including features like frame generation, reflex, and now an AI model that injects new lighting and materials to make the scene more photorealistic. In the blog post, NVIDIA acknowledges that the challenges the AI video models have faced in the past, namely their unpredictability. NVIDIA's solution is to tie the model to the color and motion vector data taken from the game engine, just like with frame generation, to keep the output grounded in the original scene. According to NVIDIA, the model is trained to quote-unquote end-to-end understand complex scene semantics such as characters, hair, fabric, and translucent skin, along with environmental lighting conditions like front-lit, backlit, or overcast, all by analyzing a single frame, unquote. The model then used that information to generate images. So, NVIDIA showed this off in a new trailer. Showing Resident Evil Requiem, Hogwarts Legacy, and EA Sports FC. And I apologize for saying the name of that second game, but it's in here. I'm sorry. And unfortunately, I did not edit. I'm just playing the video directly from YouTube, so you're going to see the dumb wizard game, and I'm sorry. It looks like the frame was taken into some kind of AI filter. It remains to be seen how much of an impact to gaming's performance this will make, or what will be as popular as the previous iterations of DLSS. NVIDIA hasn't released an exact release date for DLSS 5, but it'll be coming sometime in fall of 2026, starting with games like Aeon 2, Assassin's Creed Shadows, and Resident Evil Requiem. NVIDIA also didn't announce which of its graphics cards will be compatible with this new AI filter, but it'll likely be limited to Blackwell cards, just like the RTX 5090 and whatever next-generation CPUs NVIDIA has coming up for 2027. Apparently, allegedly, this is running on two 5090s. You need two 5090s for this to work. And so it is way out of the reach. And obviously, with the AI infrastructure rollout, there's a RAM shortage. So it's actually harder to get these GPUs you're going to need two of them to run this very soon. So good luck finding them. Dark Saga says it really looks better. It really just looks better lit. And it's not really just that, because what they have done is they'll like do things like add wrinkles, and it's essentially like they will change basically how even the character looks. Like it's a different person is what you start seeing with some of these. You know, I think there was the one here, showing with it off, you can see like there's certain features, but then the AI, it actually like shortens her nose. It like gives her a thinner nose, because that's conventionally more beautiful, because it's a model that's been trained, and that's convention. So there are even other things in what some people are worried about is that this will take, you know, the art direction away from the artists. The artist may have wanted something there that DLSS 5 takes away. And I think it was when we get to the soccer, the football one, that's kind of a different person. Like, it looks a little bit better, but there are some features in the face that's different from the actual originally created person. And Tireclaw says, what I noticed when they show Resident Evil Requiem, the background has fog, and DLSS 5 removed the fog. Once again, it's an atmospheric choice that AI is like, oh, it's blurry. Let me fix that for you. So a lot of gamers, or a lot of people, especially on like Blue Sky, really rallied against this because it's, you know, taking art direction away from artists and things like that. So Bethesda did react to the reactions. And because Starfield is one of the games that was shown in here, and I think they even did a longer thing on Starfield that was more than just the trailer. And IGN has said that Bethesda is committed to further adjusting the lighting and final effect of NVIDIA's controversial DLSS 5 visuals on Starfield after fans strongly criticized the game's AI-like faces when the controversial new technology was applied. Countless fans have left comments slamming the AI-generated slop visuals demonstrated by NVIDIA in Starfield and a range of other blockbuster games, including Oblivion Remastered, Assassin's Creed Shadows, and Resident Evil Requiem, calling it an AI filter that players, quote-unquote, don't want. NVIDIA announced this and dubbed it the GPT moment for graphics. Dark Soccer in our chat says, if all it did was enhance textures and lighting, I wouldn't be too upset, but remaking things, no. The biggest one that you can tell it remake, and I'm not going to put it on the screen because it's the stupid wizard game that I really don't want to show again, is the amount of wrinkles. It added so many wrinkles to the old woman that were not there originally. And some, you know, what you can say what you want about the person who owns owns that property, and they're all valid. But the concept art, or not even the concept artist, the artist that generated that woman, that created that woman, gave her the wrinkles that she gave her. And that was, it was a very deliberate decision what type of wrinkles and where they were on the face. And DLSS 5 is like, no, 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 you need like five more. You need to make her uglier. Because that's what AI is trained to do. That's what the network is trained to do. You don't program an AI, you train it. So despite comments from Bethesda boss Todd Howard hailing the impact as amazing, the results have failed to impress some fans who have hit back at the photorealistic lighting and facial details, forcing Bethesda to seemingly walk back some of that excitement soon afterwards. So they said, quote, appreciate your excitement and analysis of the new DLSS 5 lighting here. This is a very early look. It's coming out this summer. And our art teams will be further adjusting the lighting and final effect to look the way we think works best for each game. This will also all be under our artist's control and totally optional for players, unquote. Opinion on the use of the AI in games continues to divide studios and their fans, with some vehemently against its use, while others claim it's an inevitable part of the future. Rockstar co-founder and former Grand Theft Auto writer Dan Houser recently likened AI to mad cow disease, but the CEO of Genvid, the company behind Choose Your Own Adventure interactive series like Silent Hill Ascension, has claimed, and I wanted to read this quote, quote, consumers generally do not care, unquote, about generative AI in games, and stated that, quote, Gen Z loves AI slop, unquote. And here's what I want to say. He's completely right. And it sucks to have to say it. But consumers don't. The general public Joe Q consumer or Jane R consumer, they don't care. Yes, on Blue Sky, everybody's against this. Everybody's hating it. Everybody doesn't, you know, wants to, you know, see it all burned to the ground. But other places, I've seen a lot of people that are like, this is amazing. I want this now. It's going to make my games look so much better. And I am the beholder of the art. And so so many consumers are excited about this. They just don't post on Blue Sky. They don't hang out in the Twitch channel of Vogue Network. They don't hang out on our Discord server. But It's the same thing. We all say, oh, we hate microtransactions. We hate DLC. Yeah. And why does Madden make billions of dollars? Why does EAFC make billions of dollars? Why is Fortnite making billions of dollars if, quote unquote, we all hate microtransactions? Why? It's because the consumers don't care. In the second half, this person says it in a very pointed way to get a visceral reaction out of you. Gen Z loves AI slop. Also true. Now, not all. This is a crude generalization, but just about the vast majority of regular younger people that are part of that generation demographic, they use generative AI all the time. They're constantly asking ChatGPT, what does this mean? Tell me about this. What is this? Hey, make a funny song for me. Hey, do this to my selfie. In fact, there have been a whole bunch of the generated AI images that people my age have put on the evil Zuckerberg site. And they've taken pictures of their kids and fed them into the because Meta's got a generative AI picture thing. They've all done that. And there's actually someone that I am an acquaintance with, not a friend, someone I am an acquaintance with that actually works for the government, the state of Georgia government here, on entertainment stuff, like with the movie studios, the TV stuff, and the game studios and stuff. And the majority of his posts are generated AI images of him in blockbuster movie scenes. And he's in charge of the government, or the state government's leading of working with all the entertainment companies. And he is very big on how do we get our students prepared to use generative AI in entertainment. So Gen Z loves AI slop is a very pointed way of saying it, but they do. They love the output of generative AI. The majority of people love the output of generative AI. They love it. So that's why you're not seeing as much of a backlash as you think you would. Because, you know, Expedition 33, they used generative AI very early on in the development process for some concept art. It's still selling really well. Crimson Desert, which is all anybody's talking about right now, right? Used generative AI for some of their concept stuff. It's already sold 2 million units. There's a lot of people that said, oh, now I'm never buying it. I'm not buying it now. Y'all lost my trust. No. Still sold 2 million units. They didn't need your purchase. Ark Raiders, Dark Soccer says. Still doing amazingly well. Yet everybody's like, well, we don't like generative AI, so we're never going to play it. We're not going to buy it. They don't care. They've all used, and the consumers, the general consumers don't care. Just like the general consumers don't care about microtransactions. They're fine with it. The general consumers don't care about DLC. They're fine with it. Yeah, we all said when we saw horse armor in Oblivion, this is never going to fly. Well, guess what? Joke's on us. It totally did fly. And I bet we've all bought DLC at some point in our lives. I always bring up this quote. I've brought it up multiple times. I don't think I brought it up on the show in a couple years. So this might be the first time you're hearing this quote. It's from a wonderful, wonderful author named Douglas Adams, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And this quote really is I've really taken this quote to heart. Because even though Douglas Adams was kind of a humorist, there was a lot that he would say that was really a reflection on reality and something to think about. And here's what he wrote in The Salmon of Doubt, which is Hitchhiking the Galaxy One Last Time. I've come up with a set of rules to describe our reactions to technologies. Number one, anything that is in the world when you're born is normal and ordinary and just a natural part of the way the world works. Number two, anything that's invented between when you're 15 and 35 is new and exciting and revolutionary, and you can probably get a career in it. And number three, anything invented after you're 35 is against the natural order of things. And that number one right there, generative AI, if for the people that generative AI, ChatGPT was introduced before they turned 15, it's going to be normal. They have no problem with it being used because it's always been used in their life. the people that are between 15 and 35, which is, yes, also younger millennials, the vast majority of them that are not artists themselves, they're like, this is great. I want to be a prompt engineer. I'm going to be an AI prompt engineer. That is a very, you know, that's what I want to do with my life. I want to prompt AI to do things. And then there's people like me who are, you know, even though I'm 29, I'm also past 35. I think that generative AI is against the natural order of things. And notice, I am saying generative AI. I'm not saying all AI. I love deterministic automations. I would love to see more. I've built so many deterministic automations where if you put in a set of inputs, you get the exact same output every time. Love that. Do that a lot. I've done that. That has been my career, is making those deterministic automations. Generative AI is non-deterministic automations where you can put in the same input 100 times and it'll give you 100 different outputs, and like maybe 5 to 10 of them will actually be incorrect. But it's also because I know what's going on. I am also, you know, because I do work in the technology space and I do know a lot of the stuff that's going on and how things work, I don't have Alexa in my house. And that floors my neighbors, because they know I'm kind of like the most technical minded person. I'm the engineer like in our neighborhood. And they all have like 5 Alexas in their house. And they have the whole smart home where it's the smart bulbs and things turn on and they can yell in their voice, turn on the TV, and it turns on the TV and all that stuff. And they're like, how do you not have an Alexa? I have an Alexa. Am I more technical than you? And I'm like, well, yeah. I'm not, because I know how it works and I don't want it in my house. I'm the person that, like, the only smart thing in my house is a printer, and I keep a gun next to it just in case it makes a noise I don't like. That's me. And the only reason I would have an Alexa is if I needed to make Alexa commands for a thing at work, in which I would then have an Alexa turn it on when I'm working and unplug the thing when I'm not. Darkstalker's like, Bobby going all off space on his printer. I mean, every time it wants me to change the ink, I feel like I want to. S. Jernomat says, I have activated his Amazon speaking device. I apologize. I need to remember that if you say the name of the device, it will wake up, and I am not trying to do that. I promise you. So your Amazon speaking device, I apologize for waking it up, S. Jernomat. I apologize. And I did not activate mic def. So the Amazon speaking device, it does not react to that. Yeah, Loki says, you haven't printed in 6 months, ink has vanished. Yes, that's usually what would happen to me. Thankfully, I am doing something on the side that actually requires me to actually like print something out like every week, which is like, I'm actually happy about it. Like, don't be like, oh, I'm so sorry, you have to print something out. I'm like, no. Trust me, it's actually for a good reason. Am I going to share what that good reason is? No, because that's my life and that has nothing to do with this. But thankfully, that's actually helped my ink last longer, because my printer's actually getting used like once a week. All right. So I talked a lot. We're not going to do a music break. I didn't really have a good one picked out. ZenMonkey 11, you missed it last week. I did Spy versus Spy. There was an overclock remix from Spy versus Spy. And that's what I played last week, and I don't think you were here for it, so you missed it. I'm so sorry. I'll play it again at some point. But we were talking about Commodore stuff last week, and that was there. So you wouldn't have heard it on the podcast anyway. I edited out the music break on the podcast. Coming up next here on the Voicey Geeks Network Twitch channel at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio 2DX. It's 3 people talking about more things than just video games, things about geek culture. They talk about all that stuff for much longer than I do. OLR, are you there?
I am, just fighting with my camera right now. We're having an argument. There it is. It's like, would you like to have an argument?
I would. Yes. Yes. let's argue right now. No. So we're talking about generative AI again.
Well,
I know.
It's a visceral reaction. And I can't help it.
And I think it's because, like, what I've kind of figured out is there are ideas peoples and there are results peoples. And sometimes they're the same people, and a lot of times they're not. And there are a lot of people who have ideas, which aren't always the best ideas, but they have them. And they, mm-hmm. but it's always a hassle for them to get the right people to generate those results. And I find that those ideas people who are not also results people are the ones that really love generative AI, because now they can get results without having to deal with a pesky human with their own mm-hmm. ideas that get in the way of my ideas. Is that something that you've seen as well? Because you've actually done a lot more like art things than I have.
There's some similar things. Like I totally understand that, and it's absolutely valid. But I was thinking in terms of a friend of mine at work who's also a manager, because I was talking about how I refuse to use our tools for anything specifically generative. I will use assistive stuff. I will let it help me reorganize a layout, mm-hmm. like check my proportions and whatnot. But she was saying that, well, I use this to generate loops for me for music when I want to sing with it. And I'm like, but you could hire somebody to do that for you. It's like, yeah, but the idea's in my head right now, and mm-hmm. I can't do this. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was thinking it in one hand, this is helping somebody be more expressive. This is helping someone do the aspect of their own art that they're missing, because she's bringing her vocal instrument mm-hmm. to it, right? And I have another friend, I've got his album sitting right over there, mm-hmm. Who uses some of those, that same site, actually just to generate loops, but then he goes in and retweaks mm-hmm. them and does what he wants with them. And I'm just like, at the same time, like, but you could do this without it. And like, well, I can do it faster with it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I can logically understand the point of view, right? Mm-hmm. But from my experience and how I feel about it, I cannot justify it, I reckon. So I understand it. I just can't justify it.
Yeah.
Especially,
go ahead and finish. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, I actually just completely forgot what I was going to say.
I'm sorry.
This is cool.
My bad.
Don't worry about it. Oh, please. My brain is like you've been up how long?
Yeah.
2 hours?
So, no, but also, like, what we're talking about there is, like, when you're both an ideas person and a results person, that is how you use generative AI, which, you know,
exactly.
both of us are as well. You know, we have ideas and we can deliver results. And so it could theoretically do some of the monotonous stuff, some of the boilerplate stuff. But there are people that can't do at all, and they're like, I'm just going to have generative AI make a song for me with my parameters. I'm going to be a prompt engineer, and then I'm going to upload it to Spotify, and I'm going to wait for the pennies to roll in. And that's the slop that we're seeing, and it's because they don't have – they're not even producing the music. They're just having the AI do it, and then they're uploading it. So they're managing it.
And on top of that, when you have a person who does not have that same level of creative spark or just the same inclination toward artistic pursuits, and then they're having a computer do this, they don't know how to prompt it. They don't know any of that. There's a lot of trouble going on with prompting as well. Mm-hmm. But when you have the person who doesn't have the creative spark telling the machine that doesn't truly have a creative spark what to do, you're just going to get slop, exactly mm-hmm. like people say, you know, the same sort of recycled, and something is always going to sound or look off about it. Mm-hmm. And that's where, like, if it was being used in conjunction with somebody who has the talent to tweak it or to use it to where, like, it's 25% of the assistance and the rest of the work is being done by the artist, even that I would kind of be okay with, because then at that point, it's a tool.
Yeah.
I mean, and they make me use, like, some of those, you know, conversational ones at work. So I just have it talk to me like she's Regina George.
Yeah.
But still, I don't find value in that. Mm-hmm. But I know people as well. Even the assistive side of it, even any of those, this is going back to the whole ChatGPT-ifying of things, is they like to be able to talk to something and have it agree like it's a person. So that, I think that's the other attractive part of it, too. is that something doesn't need human brain or emotion to parse what they're trying to say. It can mostly figure it out, or it can ask the questions for what it does not understand. And there's just, yeah. I have feelings.
Yeah. And to kind of just tie this back around and put it back on video games, talking, because I didn't talk about the Crimson Desert stuff, which is the new hotness, the game that was supposed to destroy everything. It's supposed to even be better than Grand Theft Auto 6, which, you know, we got before Grand Theft Auto 6. But would they actually come out a statement, because people were like, wait a minute, this looks AI generated. And they came out and they basically put out a long statement, which everybody's like, OK, they admitted it. Now I hate it, that they had used generative AI early on. In like 2022, 2023, because it was the new hotness. And if you are a good tech company, you are going to evaluate these tools. Yeah. And what the cliff notes, the way that I understood it is they tried it. They did some stuff early on. They learned this doesn't work for us. But they didn't get rid of the stuff that they had already made. They were like, the tech is neat, but long term, this is not going to work for us. And I don't fault them for that, because you need, like, I have evaluated this stuff. Like, a lot of people are like, I have never used GPT in my life. I have. And I saw what it could do. And I saw what it couldn't do. And I said, this has no place in my workflow. But I needed to use it. And yes, use up some of the water and some of the resources. So, I mean, I've been the problem. I'm so many problems in the world. So, but you know, I've tried it.
Perfect.
I've tried it, and it wasn't something that I used long term, and so I haven't used it since. I do have to use it some for work. They actually do track, and so I have to have some conversations with Claude and Cursor. For those of you who are, you know, programming people, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah,
I have to use Claude.
Yeah, and they actually look at the usage, because they're like, we're paying for it, you better use it. So you know.
Sorry about that. It's a lot of the same at my work. Mm-hmm. That like I have to I need an interface with MCP so I can attach some of my different tools that I use together for my reporting, and I have no way around it. I have to use the tool that work has provided me to use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
and unfortunately, I can't retire for at least 15 more years. So I've got to figure out how to reconcile my morals with my desire to eat food and have a roof over my head. And I'm also saying this because if you are listening to this and you feel that I as a person am no longer trustworthy because of your morals, I thank you for being here as long as you have. And I hope
thank you
I
for
wish
being
you
a
well.
Friend.
Yeah, thank you for being a friend, and I wish you well. And you know, I learned a long, long time, or I didn't learn a long time ago. I learned recently in life. I wish I learned it earlier. Don't set yourself on fire just to make someone else comfortable. Keep someone else warm.
I look at everything as sort of the green eggs and ham. You're not going to know it until you try it. You're not going to like it until you try it. You're not going to know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, it could be the most amazing thing in the universe, or it could be completely gross or covered in green food dye. Yeah. But I do want to say just my last little bit on this is that I had put a post up about telling people to educate themselves on the various aspects of machine learning. Mm-hmm. It is not an intelligence.
No.
There is no intelligence behind it. It mimics an intelligence. It is not an intelligence. But educate yourself on something before you hate it. Because I don't want to ask you, okay, why is it that you're against this? Well, because this is what they said on here. And they're like, no, what research did you do? Because I guarantee you, you're being just as lazy as the people who are using the AI.
And on that note, what else are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio 2DX tonight?
We have a special guest. Gasp.
I know.
Gasp. And we have some pinball news.
Ooh.
Do you like Whitewater?
I do like Whitewater.
We're getting a spiritual sequel.
I'm so excited.
And music games and Scooby-Doo.
All right. Orange Lounge Radio 2DX with a special guest is up next. Thanks so much, Jamie.
You're welcome. Anytime.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us. Interact with us directly. And as Sharon and Matt even says that I need to work to afford more Picross and Legos. That's right. They announced Konami Picross for late April. I never got the SNK one. I do have the Capcom one. I am not as far in it as I should. I stopped playing Picross just a little bit. I had something else that helps me get to bed. But anyway, I will get back on it. Jupiter does amazing with the Picross series on Nintendo. And that's all I'm going to say on that. But I will be back next week, and I will not be talking about Picross because it's not going to be out. So you can catch us live, interact with us directly right here at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. You can also follow me on Instagram at Bobby Black Wolf, Bluesky at BobbyBlackWolf.com, or on our Discord server, VogNetwork.com/Discord. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet, but we would not be able to make this work without the help of the chatters who go above and beyond, including at the very early on, we had Dark Sakura gigantified an emote, and it was 500 bits, and I'm like, that's a lot. Did I set it that high? And I apparently did. So during Orange Zone Radio 2DX, I am fixing that, because you should not have to pay $5 just to make an emote big in our chat. I'm not going to do that. That is rude of us, and I apologize, and I am glad that none of you actually did it. Thank you, Jamie, for doing that. To also alert me and give me a hint that I needed to fix that. Mike Deft resubscribed, saying, whoop. And then we also had 200 bits from Sean322, 350 bits from SJR and Matt, 100 more bits from Sean322 that said, please be kind and rewind. And then Rin Marie also resubscribed. Thank you so much for that. And we did have a hype train early on in the show. Thank you so much for all that and all the support. I'm going to get out of here so we can get to the special guest. I will probably play more Retro Rewind. I am way past the refund period. I played it for way more than 2 hours. And it might be something that is up your alley. Try the demo and see if it's something. If it's not something you like after trying the demo, at least you gave it a shot. I'll see you next week. Take care of yourself. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom, although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Black Wolf Studios.